In a world in which movies struggle to find plot, Alan Adams of The Main Edge breaks it down for you in Pass the Popcorn. Now on Downtown with Rich Kimball.
Let's all go to the lobby. Let's all go to the lobby.
Let's talk movies. Alan Adams here in studio with us on this Monday. Welcome, Mr. Adams.
Hello, how are you?
Very good, thank you. You had a nice weekend.
I did. I had a lovely weekend. I got to do all kinds of fun stuff. Friday night, we went to see the second and final preview of Mary Poppins at Penobscot Theater Company. Sheridan and I went, and just an absolute delight. Like, it was just a really lovely production. In terms of, I gotta say, Bangor folks, I don't think you've seen anything to this scale on the Opera House stage. Certainly not in a very, very long time. It's the production values, the set, the lights, the costumes, it's all phenomenal. Big production numbers, song and dance. And the whole thing about Mary Poppins, she flies. she flies. It happens. She takes off from the deck up into the rafters, and you're like, well, I hope she comes back. it's just an absolutely lovely, lovely collection of talent.
We were told, by the way, that our friend Ben Lehman is going to make you cry as Mr. Banks.
Oh my God, he's so good. Well, it's he and Christy Robinson as the Banks parents, and those two have such a wonderful rapport on stage. And yeah, Ben is absolutely phenomenal in this show. The woman they have playing Mary Poppins, Stephanie Bacisteau, I believe is how her name is pronounced. She's marvelous. Like, she's an absolutely one could say she's practically perfect in every way. she really kills it. Dominic Varney as Bert the Chimney Sweep, just a delight. He has a couple of pretty big moments that I think people are going to be really excited about. But just up and down the cast, just a wonderful collection of really talented individuals, bringing to life a story that we're all familiar with. But the joy of this one is it sort of pulls from multiple sources. So you have you've got the stuff from the movie, the Disney movie that we're all familiar with, but it also pulls directly from some of the P.L. Travers work as well. And so you have that combination. So it's a familiar story, but it's told in a way that I think is largely unique to this musical production. And so it's a chance to see something that's a little bit different. And their take on Mary is a little bit different in a way that I'm not going to spoil, but that I found very intriguing personally. And it all comes down to the talent involved both on stage and behind it. And from top to bottom, it was just a phenomenal experience.
Nice.
Well, and we're there, and when you're there and you're watching, this show's comes in close to 2.5 hours long once you're including intermission and stuff. There are little kids in the audience, and it's like, that's a long time for a little one. Just wrapped. Wow. Just absolutely just captured by the magic of the production. So kudos to them, and here's hoping that the rest of their run is as successful as what we saw this weekend.
Nice. Yeah, we're looking forward to seeing it. We're taking our little guy.
He's going to love it.
Yep, good.
He's going to love it.
I know we will, that's for sure. So what do we got? Have you seen any movies since last we chatted?
I did. I did actually see a couple of movies.
Oh my goodness!
Believe it or not, despite the many different sorts of things going on with my crazy weekend, I did get to see a couple. I got to see one in the theater. I got to see the latest entry into the DC Extended Universe. I went to see The Flash, closer to home. I sat down, and this was actually kind of popped up on my radar just in the last few days. Disney Plus is running a Stan Lee documentary.
I heard about that over the weekend. Yeah.
Yes, well, there's a little controversy surrounding it, we'll talk about that a little bit. A couple of other movies that didn't get to, but will eventually. Action sequel Extraction 2 starring Chris Hemsworth on Netflix. The first one was very good. I'm anticipating watching that new one probably tonight, honestly. And I'll get to see Elemental as well, the new Pixar movie. I don't know. It's feels like Pixar's in a little bit of a slump right now. And so it'll be interesting to see how they fight their way out of it. But that's neither here nor there. What we've got is we've got the Flash and we've got Stan Lee. So we're really running the comic book gamut today. Maybe we'll start with the Flash.
Sure,
that's the sort of the big one. It's interesting watching this movie, particularly when you take into account the fact that it was almost a decade in development. Like, they started work on this movie like 9 years ago. And the fact that, the reins of the whole DC movie making apparatus have only recently been handed over to James Gunn, who has made it clear, I think it's going to be pretty much a hard reboot. And so, like, basically what we're getting this movie, and then I think the Aquaman sequel comes out in December. Those are sort of the last vestiges of this latest iteration of the DC. And I think it's all getting blown up. And I don't know who, if anybody, is coming back. I'd be surprised if Ezra Miller came back as Barry Allen / The Flash, because, we'll lead with the fact that he's one of those performers who I think is much better in small doses than carrying the load. And also, he's maybe kind of a weirdo creep due to some of his extracurricular activities, both in, I believe in both Hawaii and Vermont. I'll allow you folks to go ahead and Google Mr. Miller's troubles along the way. Suffice to say, it gets weird in some places as far as his personal life is concerned. But that's not what we're here to talk about.
No.
We're here to talk about The Flash, where we see our friend Barry Allen, The Flash, as he is sort of figuring out his place in the larger superhero picture. Unfortunately, it appears that place seems to be largely cleaning up the messes left behind by his fellow Justice Leaguers, whether it's Superman, Wonder Woman, or specifically Batman. Our guy Ben Affleck is back as the Batman for this guy. Barry's sort of working through some stuff and not sure entirely what his place is in this world. And he keeps coming back to this idea that if he could only go back and fix the traumatic incident of his childhood, specifically the death of his mother, a death for which his father, played by Ron Livingston, who's great in this, is accused. He maintains his innocence. Barry maintains his innocence, but he is in prison for this crime. And Barry wants nothing more than to prove his father's innocence and exonerate him. Comic book shenanigans ensue, and Barry discovers, oh, hey, if I run fast enough, I can travel backward in time. Because, comic books.
Sure.
And he winds up going back in time in an effort to make right the situation and save his mother from, from her grisly fate. But here's the thing, Rich. When you start messing around with the space-time continuum, stuff gets weird. And our man Barry winds up coming loose into his own past, where he encounters himself as a slightly younger version. And his family is intact, but things are different. Not least of which, there's no Superman in this world. Yes. And so things get very complicated when our man General Zod shows up, played by Michael Shannon, who's back, although every interview that I've seen with him about this, he seems kind of confused as to why he's back and how this, because he's like, I don't know if you saw Man of Steel, but I'm pretty sure I died. But he's back being wonderfully, gloweringly Michael Shannon, which is always awesome. Mm-hmm. But we discover there's a lot of other stuff that's different about this new world that Barry has landed in, including, and this is not a spoiler because it has been included in any number of the promotional materials, this universe, no Superman, does have a Batman, however, but it's not our Ben Affleck Batman, no, it's Michael Keaton. Michael Keaton is our Bruce Wayne / Batman.
Wow.
And it is the guy who was in the Tim Burton movies in the late 80s and early 90s. And so he is a much older, more grizzled, and frankly, cynical and put down by by life Batman. He comes and basically we're left with the idea that Barry and other Barry and Michael Keaton Batman and perhaps a couple of other surprises show up, and they have to be the ones who save the world from Zod, because there's no Superman this time. And again, it all gets very complicated and multiversal in any number of ways, particularly when we get to the film's climax. I'm definitely not going to spoil anything, except to say that we do get glimpses of many different iterations of these iconic characters, including some that are familiar. Maybe we saw them, or maybe we were just told the legends of what they may have been. And it is very cool. And you get this this wonderful climactic moment. And do things turn out all right? Well, you could probably guess, but I'm not going to tell you one way or the other. Look, it's fun. It's a much lighter in tone movie than a lot of the entries in the DC Extended Universe, even though the stakes are, you know, the usual, like, the world's going to end. We still get some quippiness, some good jokes. Ezra Miller, as I sort of alluded, he's a much better in small doses kind of guy than, I think, you know, shouldering the entire load for a movie. But I will say, and this can't be stressed enough, it was so great to see Michael Keaton back in that part. It was so cool. Like, he's so good, and like he gets it, and he's always gotten it. Like, and that's one of those things where I think maybe people don't necessarily give him enough credit for being the guy who really, like, if those Batman movies don't work, like, who knows what we're looking at as far as a cinematic landscape. You know what I mean? Like, he, like, in a lot of ways, between you know, Christopher Reeve in Richard Donner's Superman movies, you know, and Keaton in Burton's Batman movies, it's like, it's kind of proof of concept almost that these things do work if they're done well. And, you know, you get the diminishing returns in both of those series that show you, yes, emphasis on done well. And so we've sort of seen that sort of be kind of reinvented, reinvigorated, et cetera, over the last, 15, almost 20 years now. But yeah, the action sequences are great. The plot's a little complicated. It always gets a little muddy when you're messing around with time travel stuff. You know, some really quality performances out of, again, like I mentioned, Michael Keaton was great. Good to have Affleck back in a little bit. We get a few glimpses of Gal Gadot's Wonder Woman, so on and so forth. But yeah, it's in a lot of ways, it's this wonderful look at, you know, the sort of the goofier aspects of superherodom, while also acknowledging the sort of elephant in the room that so many of these characters are, their entire identities are so fully informed by trauma, and sort of like getting a look at, like, sort of exploring this notion of, okay, so who would they be if they didn't have that trauma? And you kind of get those sort of juxtapositions as well. Now, I say things like that, and you're like, wow, that movie sounds a lot more sophisticated than I expected it would be. Please do not take that to mean that there's anything beyond a brightly colored bang bang shoot 'em up superhero movie here. But as far as those things go, like, we've seen a lot worse, particularly from the folks at DC. So, you know, it's an interesting way to see how it's all going to wrap up. This sort of phase of the DCEU, and then we'll get to see, you know, going forward, you know, who sticks around for James Gunn and the crew. But yeah, as far as, if you're going to go out the Flash, you could go out in worse ways.
Now, it had a really disappointing weekend at the box office. Was some of that, you think, Ezra Miller backlash?
I think a little bit. Like, I mean, it's, he really is, I'm sorry, they really are a bit of a lightning rod, you know, sort of a polarizing figure in a lot of respects. And again, like, and it's interesting to sort of think about it in these terms, because, you know, Iron Man, I think, could be painted with the same brush, and we all saw how that sort of came. But is anyone's favorite character the Flash? Like, do you know what I mean? It's just like, he's such a, like, a, he feels like much more of a secondary type character, in terms of these sort of tentpole films, and the character had not really been given enough space to develop for us to be invested in him already. And so what we got was a movie that was made almost as if it was assumed that we had more of a connection to the character than we did. And I mean, I think as far as strategies go, The director, Andy Muschietti, who I think is maybe probably best known for the It adaptations. But I think it was a good, I mean, I think it was a smart choice as far as that goes. I don't know what else you do, because, you know, we don't need another origin story.
Right.
You know what I mean? And so how else do you sort of bring people in who aren't as familiar with the character? And I think, walking that sort of fine line, I think Muschietti did a pretty good job, as good a job as you could when you're hamstrung by like long-term development issues, weirdness surrounding your lead performer, and the fact that your movie is, you know, you've made this movie that's intended to be a piece of a franchise that's not really going to exist anymore.
Right.
And so you add all those factors in, and ultimately what you get is maybe the best possible outcome considering all of those varied circumstances.
All right, let's hear about Stan Lee, Jack Kirby's favorite movie.
It was funny watching this movie because there are few figures in American popular culture in the last 100 years who were as blatantly self-aggrandizing and self-promotional as Stan Lee. Like, that was his whole shtick, was to make sure the world knew how great Stan Lee was. And so I suppose, especially considering how tightly interwoven Disney and Marvel are at this point, this documentary, wouldn't you know, pretty positive about Mr. Stan Lee, really selling the greatness of the man, bringing together a collection of some wonderful archival footage, some interviews, and this wonderful device where they did these dioramas intended to sort of capture certain moments in Lee's life, usually primarily like earlier in his career in the industry, simply because, you know, there weren't a lot of photos.
Mm.
So it was a really interesting way to sort of capture that time while advancing the story forward. I enjoyed the movie, but again, like, it would be irresponsible not to discuss the Jack Kirby, as you mentioned, and Steve Ditko sort of issues surrounding Stan Lee's tenure at the, you know, leading Marvel, because the movie doesn't really. There are a couple of brief allusions. Kirby and Ditko, I mean, you can't tell the story of Marvel Comics without including Jack Kirby and Steve Ditko, but it did feel like they were sort of minimized to an extent, which is, it's unfortunate. We do get one sequence. It's a radio interview that was being done with Jack Kirby back in the late 80s, and they had Stan Lee call in as a sort of surprise. And it's remarkable to listen to just this one. It's a couple minutes long, and it's like the first like half a minute, 45 seconds, like it's exchanging pleasantries. Like, it's like, oh yes, you know, blah, 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 blah. You know, it's like, oh, you were great at this. And oh, you were great at this. And then, and it's so, I mean, it's a perfect encapsulation of who Stan Lee was. He's like, but you know, like, the person who had the idea probably owns, you know, like, he just had to get in that dig and remind everyone that he believed that he thought he was the guy who was the creator of Spider-Man. And, you know, I'm not going to go through the whole list because it's a very lengthy one. Whereas, you know, folks like Kirby and Ditko, the artists who, basically created the worlds in which these characters existed, like what we see when we think of these characters, like, Stan Lee didn't do that. Jack Kirby did that. Steve Ditko did that. Chris Claremont did that. Like, it's on and on and on and on. Like, these iconic artists who are the ones who are responsible for the pictures we have in our heads. And the reality is, like, comic books, the stories are great, but they are visual mediums. Right. And so, like, so much of what a character is defined by how they look in comic books. And so for someone like Stan Lee, who, again, was a visionary and was a combined a vivid imagination and just an absolute tireless work ethic to churn out this material, like, he certainly warrants kudos. Like, there's no question about that. But this movie, even though it was intended very much as a celebration of Stan Lee, you still see an inherent egotism. Like, there's a selfishness almost to it, where it, like, just this inability to share credit with other people that, you know, sort of sprung up multiple times over the course of his life. Now, this movie, it focuses very much on his early days in the business, you know, the 50s, the 60s, up through to the early 70s. And then there's a really big jump where it's like they basically, you know, ignore the sort of the market saturation and the sort of the general sort of, I don't know, the sort of the bubble bursting of like the, you know, the collectible boom of the early 90s, and how, you know, the you know, Marvel went into bankruptcy in the late 90s. You know, we skip over all of that. It's basically like we go from the mid 70s up into the, like, almost the, like, the late aughts, and we jump from, you know, that basically the peak of comic book success to straight to, like, the world of the Marvel Cinematic Universe. Like, that's the leap we make. And yeah, and that's kind of it. Like, I'm not going to go through it. He was born Stanley Lieber and blah, blah, and we're not going to do that. It's, you know, you get enough of the biographical nuts and bolts, and we get to see, you know, we get to hear from some of the people who worked with him. His wife Joan is featured pretty prominently. But again, it feels incomplete because, again, anyone with real knowledge of the situation, like, knows the deal. And so instead of, like, hiding it or glossing it over, like, let's dig into it. Like, let's have that conversation, because I think there's a really important conversation that can be had regarding the nature of collaborative creation and, you know, and how that does eventually get credited, particularly when we start talking about millions and then billions of dollars.
And it's not unheard of in comic books. I mean, it's not just Stan Lee that has this issue.
Oh, yeah. Like,
the big, really well-known one is Bob Kane being the creator of Batman, completely ignoring the contributions of Bill Finger.
Exactly. You know,
who was instrumental.
Yeah, and it's like, and the whole work for hire model of the comic book industry, particularly during the time when so many of these iconic characters are being created, it's like, that's the deal. Like, you get, you come up with a character, it's like you get your check that day, but that's it. Like, that is company property now. And you know, and Lee himself even alludes to it at one point during an interview in the documentary, where he talks about, he's like, I wish I had had the forethought to consider possibly copywriting some of this stuff for myself as opposed to for the company. But again, the way the business was structured, like, you know, he's talking about the time in the late 60s. He's like, you know, we're basically doing like two books a day. Like, you know what I mean? Like, just the sheer, like, volume of material that was churned through those offices during that time is frankly staggering. The idea of that kind of, like just waving, like, unending wave of production, because it's like, you know, they have how many, like, monthly titles, and every single one of them, like, it's like they got to come out. So it's like, it's just the constant churn, you know, with someone like Lee kind of leading the way. Again, like, it's a little bit of don't meet your heroes. Like, you know, you don't necessarily always want to know how the sausage is made, but at the same time, it's like, yeah, like, I want to know that, you know, I want to understand the conflict here. Like, I want to understand the sort of, the chutzpah it takes to just, like, stand out there and just be like, well, actually, like, I know all these other people, like, contributed to this, but it's me. I did it. I'm the one who did it. And everyone else was a servant to my vision. And that was kind of his deal. And, you know, he...
But if you live to be 95, you get to do that, right?
That's the thing. Like, it's like, you know, you stick around long enough and it's like, oh, yeah, you can, like, yeah, history's what you say it is at that point.
Yeah.
You know, and, you know, especially when you consider he was turned into sort of the kindly old granddad of the MCU with the constant, you know, cameos and stuff like that. So it's a fascinating dude. I would have liked to see, like, what his... how things were for him when he was sort of like pushed back from the limelight in the, you know, in Marvel in the latter decades of the 20th century. Like, I would like to know a little bit more about his life at that point. But the reality is, like, there are people out there who don't necessarily know that much about Stan Lee. They just know him as who's the old guy who's in all the Marvel movies. And so for them, something like this is a, it's a well-made introduction. It's an incomplete introduction. Mm.
Is there a better movie waiting to be made about the entire Enterprise?
I would love to see something like that. And I think it's funny that you mention that, because I was having a conversation with someone about this, this idea of, we've had this weird spate of like movies about products, right? Like with Air. The BlackBerry movie, which received very good notices. There was a Tetris movie about the making of Tetris. Flamin' Hot, which we talked about last week. And so I think there is a movie to be made about that time where you could do it without necessarily bumping up against the intellectual property issues that would come with talking about this. I'm not sure how you do that, but it really would be fascinating. A biopic about, you know, Marvel Comics, like, I would watch it. Carrie would watch it.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I don't know who else would watch it, but hey, indie filmmakers, because, again, I don't know that Disney Plus is going to sign off on this. Let's make this happen.
There you go. Alan Adams talking movies with us. Thanks, Al.
Hey, my pleasure.